countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Follow our new Weanling Watch series for expert analysis and commentary from thousands of cattle sales weekly.
Now, the government is set to publish the climate budgets, which will have a trickle-down effect for every one of us in the next few weeks. But at the coalface, farmers and food producers will see a rapid change in how they go about their business in order to meet carbon reduction targets. What impact is that going to have, and how will we produce food from farm to fork into the future? I'm joined now by Professor Peter Thorne from the Department of Geography at Maynooth University. He's also a member of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and of the Climate Change Advisory Council. Trevor Donlan is Head of Economics and Farm Surveys with Chagas and a member of the Carbon Budgets Committee. Dr. Cara Gustenberg is Environmental Policy Fellow at UCD and a member of the Climate Change Advisory Council as well. And Dr. Anne Finnegan is Policy Analyst with the Farmers Journal. You're all very welcome to the programme and thanks for joining us. Peter, I'm going to begin with you. The binding target by law for a total reduction of 51% in total across all emitting sectors, having agriculture emissions is considered an impossible ask by the CCAC. So can you explain why it is likely that agriculture will not have to cut its emissions by 51%, that it'll be treated a little differently?
Well, as you rightly point out, we did an analysis across all the sectors, and it was very, very clear that a 51% reduction in agricultural emissions would simply be unfeasible, unacceptable, would have unacceptable consequences for rural Ireland. But equally, agriculture making no emissions cut would have negative impacts in terms of the other sectors. And many of those sectors, of course, affect rural Ireland as well. Transport, heating, electricity, energy production. So we need a balanced set of outcomes here. The Carbon Committee or the Carbon Committee and the Climate Change Advisory Council have set a 51% reduction economy-wide, and it is now the job of government to decide how to divide that pie.
Okay, farmers say at the moment that if they continue to do things on their farm like Thomas O'Connor spoke about there, that collectively there'll be a reduction of emissions of somewhere in the region of 80-90%, and they, happy days for them, they will reap the benefits of it as well. They'll be more sustainable, more efficient as well. But they're going to have to go beyond that. They won't have to go to 51%, but what do you think that will be asked of them, and will that require a reduction in cow numbers?
So we looked at a number of illustrative scenarios, and indeed a 19% cut is not feasible for the fact that the energy and other sectors would have to do too much lifting. So it will have to be more than 19%. But ultimately, how much is a decision for government? It's trade-off between sectors. It's trade-off between different individuals' implications. So it will be the job of government to come up with that. The other thing the council made abundantly clear is this needs to be a just transition. We cannot cut and run on our farmers or any other sector. We must protect those who are negatively impacted. We must have meaningful livelihoods for farmers. We must work to develop new market opportunities. We must put in place the policies that enable farmers to continue to have a livelihood
and stay in the land and make the best use of the land in a sustainable way, I suppose. Anne Finnegan of the Farmers Journal, good morning to you. Your paper commissioned a report carried out by KPMG running numbers on these various scenarios. So let's say if there was a reduction of 18%, it wouldn't make a big difference. But beyond that, Peter says, agriculture is going to have to go beyond that to play its part. It won't have to go to 51, but it might have to go closer to 30. So when you're in the realms of cutting emissions between 20 and 30% in agriculture, what does the report say will be the economic impact?
Okay, good morning, Damien. Yeah, you're right. In the absence of any analysis of, first of all, a roadmap for farming in terms of cutting emissions, and secondly, an economic impact of that, the Farmers Journal commissioned KPMG to undertake this research. So you're right. Broadly speaking, we've looked at five scenarios. The first two scenarios will bring us up to cuts of 18% in emissions by implementing the mitigation measures that Thomas talked about and others on farm that are known and that have been costed by Chagas. I think it's fair to say, though, Damien, and we have to bear in mind, getting to that 18% with those mitigation measures, both existing measures and those pipeline measures that are just coming to fruition and just coming to market, that in itself requires a huge uplift at farm level. So I don't think we can be complacent about that and suggest that, you know, this is a simple task for farmers. It's not. And I think in the context of that, there's a huge opportunity for the government in terms of the CAP plan that they're formulating and finalising at the moment and repointing some of the environmental money in terms of the eco schemes or the new agri-environmental scheme towards that. But okay, that's going to be very important.
Okay, so you say, yeah, there is a lot of investment going on to reach that target. But beyond that target, it's not going to be enough at 90% to implement those technologies and hope for the best. It's going to have to go beyond it. So what do KPMG say will happen if you do that?
So beyond that, KPMG's analysis has said that without any new technologies coming to market, beyond 18% cut in emissions, you are into the realm of cutting livestock numbers in order to get further emissions reductions. And obviously the consequences of that are an impact on farm incomes, on output at farm level, and the overall, the wider economic output, and indeed jobs in rural Ireland. So if we take a 30% cut and acknowledge what Peter has said around a 50% cut, but if we look, say, at a 30% cut in emissions at farm level, KPMG have found that this would require a 25% cut in cattle numbers, and that would come at a cost of about 2.1 billion per annum at farm level, 4.4 billion to the wider farm and processing supply chain, and would cost the sector somewhere in the region of 55,000 jobs. So it's a really significant economic impact at farm level. And I suppose that's the context of what these pathways mean, first of all, and the reality of what government will have to deal with in terms of setting the emission ceilings. But that's the reality of what farmers are facing this morning when they're considering this.
Okay, well, I'll just bring Cara Gustenberg in at that point. So here we are, Cara, looking at if we have a 30% reduction in emissions from agriculture, output is hit to the tune of 2 billion. It's a 4 billion cost to the wider economy. And lots of job losses as well. Now, that is obviously not taking into consideration the great benefits from an environmental perspective. We just focus on the economic impact. It's quite seismic. And we don't seem to have realistic alternatives in place at this point in time to compensate farmers in tandem and have a just transition, as Peter talks about.
Yeah, Damien, I read the KPMG report, and while the numbers are interesting, I would say it's a very coarse, output-focused analysis. It makes a lot of assumptions that we would equally split the emissions reductions among farms and across sectors. And in fact, if you look at the economic damage of a 30% emission reduction, on average for a beef farm, it's €2,800 a year for that kind of emissions reduction. I would argue that that's something we can manage, and I think the government has committed to paying farmers for doing other things and moving into land management. And your previous caller there, the farmer that you interviewed, you know, talked about how expensive the input costs are, the cost of fertilizer. So I would think that some farmers would be happy to move into other enterprises such as growing trees or producing more fodder or creating riparian habitats to improve water quality. And we, as taxpayers, have committed in our carbon tax to help farmers make that transition. So 15% of the carbon tax budget is going to help farmers in making that transition. So I think both the government and the public have committed to helping make the transition and paying farmers for other enterprises so that they can reduce emissions and they can reduce input costs and it can be a beneficial situation
for them. Well, you're involved in the Signpost program run by Chagas, which is where select farms are used as models of best practice and then emissions reductions are measured as well. Do you accept that there is a lot of good work going on in that regard to, I suppose, clean up farming?
Yeah, and I think even the KPMG report shows that, you know, below 18% emissions reduction, that actually it's a really positive economic benefit for farmers. And Signpost is showing a lot of things they can be doing regarding mixed species swards and lowering input costs and switching fertilizer to protected urea that would reduce emissions and either enhance their bottom line or not have a negative effect. So I think those are things we need to be doing right now, that it's a pity that we didn't start doing them earlier, since they've shown such benefits both economically and for the climate. And then we have to show some climate leadership here about how we get the rest of the way. And I think that's what's really been lacking in the agricultural sector. In energy, we've seen the likes of EirGrid and Tipperary Energy Agency and even on posts coming forward and saying, hey, we see what we need to do and we have offerings here to help reduce emissions in our sectors. But we haven't seen that in agriculture. Instead, we've seen a lot of talk about what we can't do and why we can't do it, instead of here's what we can do and here are the kind of supports that we need to help us do it.
Okay, but Trevor Donlan, just on that point, if a farmer listening to us now, if you know they put their cows into calf today, it'll be 2024 maybe when these calves are ready for selling or for slaughter. So if we're going to have a cut in cattle numbers, that planning has to start right now, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, the biology, Damien, of agriculture is exactly as you set out. You know, there's a 2 year or 3 year timeline in terms of making any adjustments like that in reality. I think my perspective on it is that we need to redouble our efforts now at this point in time. We need to, you know, the analysis that has been produced to this point reflects largely science that currently exists in order to reduce emissions. And we need to find new solutions very rapidly. There needs to be a huge effort there, you know, along the lines of what we've done for COVID and the vaccines. And in addition to that, we need a huge take up by farmers of these technologies. I mean, some of these technologies that already exist are not yet in place. Thomas expressed frustration earlier in terms of the fact that he's already doing some of these things. We need more farmers to do these things as well, basically, in the future.
But have we run out of road?
I don't think we've run out of road. I think you know, the term code red was used for when the climate report came out initially from the UNFCCC a few weeks ago. And it's a code red for agriculture now, I think, as well, at this point in time. The time for action is really here now at this stage.
Peter, farmers have become the poster boys for the climate destruction. You know, you read a report about having to reduce emissions. It's a picture of a cow. I know that's all aesthetics and all of that. But at the same time, some people are asking the question, how is it that when it comes to transport and energy, it's the point of consumption that accounts for carbon emissions, but when it comes to food, it's at the point of productions that emissions are attributed?
Yeah, I totally disagree that farmers are the poster boys of climate change problems. It puts the problem nicely on someone else, and that's the wickedness of the climate problem, is that everyone wants it to be somebody else's problem. We've got to get away from farmers being seen as the problem. Farmers are the solution to a lot of this, and we need to have more sensible conversations, partnership conversations, moving this forwards constructively, because 70% of our emissions roughly are not from agriculture. If we're going to get to net zero, we're going to have to play with those emissions. So,
but just going back to farmers, the way they're accounted, you know, this idea that it's a point of production rather than the point of consumption when it comes to food. Why is that?
It's because it's the cows burping fundamentally that are forming the emissions. But you're right, it should be more nuanced. It is also down to the consumer choice, and that's made very clear in the IPCC special report on climate change and land use, which did make the point that we will have to move to progressively plant-based diets to feed the number of people that we have and to keep climate in a sensible space.
But Cara, on that, we heard Thomas as well talk about the great advantage of Ireland's climate when it comes to producing beef. Environmental campaigners don't accept the argument that if we cut production here, it'll be replaced by production less sustainably in Brazilian feedlots, for example, at a time when the global demand for bovine protein is increasing as the population grows. Now, we are being encouraged in the Western world to move more towards a plant-based diet, But the figures are there that the demand, as in particularly in Africa and in Asia, is increasing for beef and dairy as the population increases. So are we better producing it here than somewhere less sustainably?
Well, Damien, if you look at the peer-reviewed evidence on carbon leakage, it has shown that actually there wouldn't be any impact on global emissions if production moved to one of these other countries. And in fact, it has shown that if Ireland leads on this and if we find new technologies for producing beef and dairy in a more sustainable way, we have an opportunity to then roll that out internationally. And, you know, and that has an economic benefit to show technological leadership in this area ahead of other countries. So that is part of the reason why we don't accept that argument, is because the evidence isn't there to show that it will happen.
I just want to go back to you, Anne. If processors and producers, you know, paid a fair price, and we as consumers were prepared, instead of running to the discounters for all our food, that we were, I suppose, valued food a little bit more now in this crisis, wouldn't it go some way to ease the pain for farmers reducing their output?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think at the end of the day, Damien, farmers are price takers. That's the environment that we live in. And you know, that's what differentiates farming to other sectors in the context of this debate. Farmers can't pass the additional costs of production on associated with green transitioning in the way that the energy sector can or the transport sector can. And as citizens, we all are going to feel those additional costs over the next decade and beyond. And farmers are citizens too, so their cost of living is going to increase as well. But, you know, they are going to take a hit on the income side. Look, I think just to go back a little bit to talk about, you know, Thomas's discussion around what he's doing on biodiversity and the potential for that to bring in additional income streams in the future. And I think we all recognise that there will be additional income streams and new income streams in farming into the future. And actually, Justin McCarthy, our editor, had a really interesting discussion with Jason Clay, who's Senior Vice President of the World Wildlife Federation, just last week. And they specifically talked about this, that farmers will be paid for things like carbon and biodiversity into the future. But those pathways don't exist at the moment.
That's right.
And so for farmers sitting at their kitchen table this morning listening to this discussion, what they're faced with is the prospect of having to cut livestock numbers. And then there's a gap. Where does the additional income come and when does it hit in? And I think in terms of a just transition, you know, when we talk about the carbon tax, that money is subsumed into the co-financing of our CAP. Right. That needs to go towards getting us to the 18% and getting the adoption of those technologies. Just transition in terms of reducing livestock numbers is putting a value on that asset that you want to take out of farming and paying farmers for that if that's what you want to achieve. And it is worrying when you read the technical report from the Climate Change Action Committee, you know, when it talks about negative subsidies, and maybe that's something the members of the committee can talk to, you know, which to me reads as a tool to force farmers to reduce down livestock numbers. Like, we're talking about trying to force them and squeeze them out of production.
Right.
And these are the most unviable, I suppose, least viable and lowest income of our producers. It just seems grossly unfair to me.
All right. Briefly, Trevor, just to finish, are we going to have less cattle in this country by 2030?
I think it's very hard to say that for sure. We've done projections. Projections are not forecasts. You know, we have the capacity to change the future. You know, if with the right research investment and with the right support of the wider stakeholder community in agriculture, I think we have the possibility to find a pathway that satisfies everybody.
Peter?
We will have to see how this pans out. That's a decision for ultimately government and the sector, not something that the council can progress upon.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. We'll know about it in a couple of weeks' time. We might come back to this discussion in relation to alternative land use as well, which is a very important component of all of this. But for the moment, thank you all very much indeed for joining us on the programme this morning.